through the passages. But we look at this, we come to Job, and we will try to touch just on sections of chapter 4 and 5, Job's friends, round 1, I call this. And we hear from the first one, his name is Eliphaz. He will do practically all the talking in these two chapters. At the beginning of your notes there, I point out that we are in a great spiritual conflict over and over called a war. We mustn't forget that. That's what we're in. I want to come back to that, Lord willing, at the very, very end, to that sentence we begin with. That we are told of both the wiles of the devil. That's a phrase in Ephesians 6. Notice that, the wiles of the devil. We know there's a devil, and he wants you to know there's wiles. I mean, he's cagey. And we are told as well of the astonishing, altering power of sin. Means we really, really need wisdom. By the altering power of sin, I would just present, you know, one. There's numerous examples, but here's just one. King David, in 2 Samuel 12, he says, I have sinned. And you look at what an excellent man that was for so many. And then you look at what he did, you know, and you say, what altered him? And he tells you what altered him. He said, I have sinned. And then he explains it in Psalm 51. Behold, I was shaped in iniquity and conceived in sin. And it's the altering power of sin. Those are things we can't afford to neglect. So when we need to remember, it's every person we meet will spend eternity somewhere. So that raises the stakes. In the end, it will be well with the righteous. When you read Job and you read try to take in this man's sufferings, and it's staggering. It just is. But James 5 says, you have heard of the patience of Job, and you have seen the end of the Lord, that he's very pitiful, very merciful. But it sure didn't seem that way to Job, and it sure doesn't seem that way to many of God's children tonight. Even tonight, young and old, it doesn't seem like the Lord is very pitiful. He is, but we have to sympathize, and you can put yourself back in some of these places yourself. When you can say, well, I know it says that, but it sure doesn't seem like it. And it didn't seem like it. And Job is very candid, and just, we'll come to that more. And our pilgrimage, and we are pilgrims, includes great trials. Let's notice a first 11 verses. Won't go into them in great detail, but number one, we just a friendly diagnosis that misses the mark is not helpful. I have thought, as perhaps some of you have in the past, that these so-called friends were really not very good friends at all, that they were harsh legalists. No, that's wrong. They were not harsh legalists. They were his friends. They were trying, and I think you can see here, they were trying to comfort him, and they were trying to do what they believe was right. And they're not ignoramuses. They know a lot about God, and they're trying to apply it. However, I'll just say at the beginning, his diagnosis misses the mark. So let's look at Job chapter 4. Possibly you remember last week, Job just spent all of chapter 3 cursing his birth, wishing he had died as a child, and longing for death. But he's not suicidal. And he's implying, you know, that God is not handling my case well. That's what's implied. Well, up to this point, his friends have been quiet. They haven't said anything. But when Job bursts out like this and really implies that God is not handling his case right, now look, would you, at verse 1 of chapter 4, it begins with the word them. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, thou hast strengthened. And I want you to notice, please notice, he is reflecting truthfully. on Job's character and deeds of the past. So this is somebody who's not jumping in to kick his teeth in. Please notice that. He's going to say, acknowledge candidly what kind of person Job was. Do you see that? Behold, verse 3, thou hast instructed many. Job is a good instructor. And thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Job had encouraged a lot of people. Thy words have upholden him that was falling. Thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. Wouldn't you like people to say that about you? Wouldn't that be a good biography? That you've encouraged many, instructed many, strengthened feeble knees. But, verse 5, now it has come to thee, and thou faintest, it toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. And he's going to say, now, Job, you need to do what you've been telling other people to do. Well, so far, that's okay. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? He's saying, you know, you've been telling people to live righteously and do righteously, and that's our hope, you know, is, you know, we sow well and we reap well. So look at verse 6. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and thy uprightness of thy ways? Remember, look at verse 7. And so verses 1 through 6, Eliphaz seeks to be cordial. He has been. He remains Job's friend. And he is just reflecting on what he's been in the past to other people, and that his hope has been in uprightness of character, which he has generally practiced. They concede that. Okay, now, however, look at verse 7. He has sought to be cordial, which would be right if our friends are suffering, to give credit where credit's due, and they so far he does that. Now he seeks to be a candid friend. Well, if you want to be a right kind of friend, you know, faithful are the what of a friend? What does Proverbs say? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. So friends, they really are your friends, and they know you're doing something wrong, they will tell you so, right? Okay, look at verse 7. Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? So now he's going to launch in a different direction. And that's called a rhetorical question, you know, a question that doesn't really need an answer. It just answers itself. For instance, whoever got a sunburn in the North Pole in winter? Anyone ever do that? No. No one ever did that. So that's what Eliphaz means. Job, I mean, some things are pretty obvious, aren't they? Like no one gets a suntan in the North Pole. Well, when do righteous people or innocent people perish? Well, that's something to think about. You know any innocent people who perished? Who baptized Jesus? And he perished.
Jesus perished.
And so it's an argument that doesn't really hold water, but it generally holds water. It generally holds water. Eliphaz is right that usually in a moral world, when you're unrighteous, it goes against you. And he will now expound on that a little more. Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity sow in wickedness. And so wickedness reap the same. Weren't we just talking about the Kennedys? So they make a fortune on liquor in prohibition, and he gets elected senator and drives off the bridge. And why do we think he drove off the bridge or off the road? What was his problem?
He was drunk.
So look at verse 8. You know, okay, it's they that plow iniquity sow and sow wickedness reap the same. We agree, right? Generally, that's true.
You reap what you sow.
Right, yeah. So now, okay, that's generally true. And sometimes the crop takes a while to come in. In both cases, righteousness, we're going to be really surprised that some people down here were the widow at the temple. I bet hardly anybody was impressed with her. But I think when you see this thing come, when you see it all, the final train come into station, people are going to be astonished. Beyond words, they're going to be astonished. So just keep that in mind. Generalizations are And okay, we'll say more about it, and I want you to come out. So look at verse 9. Why do people who sow iniquity reap the same? Look at, keep reading verse 9. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils they are consumed. Because God runs the world, doesn't he? Yes, he does. Okay, now we get personal. Verses 9, 10, and 11. Probably these verses... probably these verses are aimed at Job. And Bill, we've got you covered. These verses are probably aimed at Job, verse 7-11. However, before we get there, Eliphaz has made this correct generalization. They that plow iniquity sow wickedness, reap the same. I want you to notice, and as we were talking before we started here about communism and how it works as a Christian heresy, borrowing our words and really accessing the divine hardware that men and women come into the world with, and they hack it. I think that's a rough enough. Let me show you what I mean. Would you turn, please, to Acts chapter 28 and verse 3 and 4. And how about Levi, if you could read that. Acts 28, 3 and 4. And notice the assumption. Okay, we'll watch these people just meet the Apostle Paul, and something happens to him, and notice the conclusion they draw right off the bat. Okay? Now, how about that for a diagnosis? See, they just said, here's a guy who gets bit by a poisonous viper. They know that's a poisonous one. And instantly they do the moral processing. Did you see that? They said, I'll tell you why he got bit. He escaped that dilemma only to be overtaken by another. Do you follow that? You see that in the passage? That these people instantly have a moral processor that works. And they form conclusions. They said, look, stuff like this just doesn't happen. You escape a sea storm, come out, make it to shore, and get bit by a poisonous bird. They said, that's just not normal. He must be a villain. And then, of course, they change their mind because he doesn't die and so on. So, look, let's come back to Job chapter 4. And I want to just point out to you, that kind of assumption is deeply rooted in us. When things go bad, they say, you know, I bet he deserved it. You know, that's what the ghost people said about Paul. They said, I bet he deserved it. They know there's some sort of moral vengeance that governs the world. They said, he deserves it. And there it is. So, okay, look a little further. Back to... Job 4, and now Eliphaz, the friend, is going to be what he considers to be a faithful friend, faithful to the wounds of friends. So verse 10, 11, the roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. Now this probably is a reference to Job. Job, the... former highly esteemed person, in various ways, has his teeth broken. He's an old lion perishing. And his whelps, well, who would that represent? Who would be Job's whelps that are scattered and are no more?
His cubs.
That's the lion's cubs, but who are they with reference to Job? His children.
His children.
Yikes. So he's being very candid. You can see that. Eliphaz, look please at verse 12. Now he's going to give grounds for what he says. Eliphaz claims divine revelation in the past communicated pertinent matters to him. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof, and the thoughts from visions of the night when the deep sleep falleth on men. And he will describe what he had, a vision at night. Now, we think because of the absence of references to the Pentateuch, the law, and Job, that Job is probably pre-Moses, probably in the time of Abraham. And you may be aware that God spoke to Abraham with a vision, Jacob with a vision, Isaac with a vision, Pharaoh with a vision, the Philistine king with a vision. Visions are common, and apparently he communicated quite a lot by visions. And so there's where you don't discredit that he probably had. I don't think the point here is to discredit them that he. This wasn't that Eliphaz didn't have any inspiration for what he heard. In fact, he heard some good things, and this is part of what he heard in the vision, in what he called divine communication. Look down, please, at verse 17. Shall a mortal man be more just than God? And shall a man be more pure than his maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. And I just want to point out in passing that these men apparently knew about angels. They didn't say, well, don't know if there are any angels or not. No, that says they knew about angels. And the angels, they knew that they were greatly inferior to their maker. So if angels are greatly inferior and need to be instructed, verse 19, how much less them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth, they are destroyed from morning to evening. And he's talking about mortals, just the rest of us, human beings. And so look on your notes there. Mortals have no business even hinting, much less declaring themselves more just than God. Now, any of us here would be very surprised if any one of us stood up tonight and said, you know, I really think I'm more just than God. Yeah, I'd be very surprised on one hand to hear that. And yet, we imply it lots of times. And Job, by his arguing later, will say this very thing, and God will communicate it right to him in so many exact words. Said, Job, you have accused yourself of being more righteous than me. Well, I'll just tell you, people do it all the time. The whole liberal agenda does it constantly. They just scoff at our God and scoff at his word and so on. And Christians can do it too in the way they respond sometimes. I had a lady right here in this kitchen. I still doubt she's a believer. She hasn't gone here for over a decade. She just said one time, nice going, God. She had a legacy of woe after woe after woe after woe after woe. I don't think she's a regenerate person. And she just said it. Nice going, God. Well, look at... Be very careful about that. I can't believe she said that. Well, I was very shocked, but we can live that out the way we respond to things. Let's skip over now to chapter 5. A correct diagnosis for the wrong person make things even worse. And probably some of you have heard of medical incidents where a patient, somehow they got the record switched around and the physicians or surgeons or attendants were administering the wrong treatment to the patient because they had the wrong records. It was correct. What was in the records was correct. And the diagnosis and the prescribed cure, but it was applied to the wrong person. And look at chapter 5. I think that's really what you have here. Call now and see if there be any that will answer thee, verse 1, and to which of the saints will you turn? He's asking another question about appealing either to men or angels. And he says, nobody's going to disqualify this fact that sin has inescapable consequences. Look at verse 2. He will go on to say, "For wrath killeth the foolish man, and envy slayeth the silly one. But I have seen the foolish taking root, but suddenly I cursed his habitation. His children are far from safety." You can see this is again an oblique reference to who? Job's children. "His children are far from safety. They are crushed in the gate." See, that's how they died. They were crushed, apparently. "Neither is there any to deliver them, whose harvest the hungry eateth up, and taketh it out, taketh it even out of the thorns, and the robber swalloweth up their substance." And basically, you could summarize what he's saying there is sin has inescapable consequences. Well, ultimately, that's true. Only it's important for us to remember as you read Job to come back to what God said about Job at the very beginning. "Hast thou considered my servant Job? There is none like him in all the earth. Perfect, upright, fears God." That means he knows God. He doesn't know a little bit about God. He fears God. His whole posture, his whole mind, his whole immaterial person is correctly postured toward God. That's what it means to fear God. And he eschews evil. He has quick spiritual reflexes. You know, that's what God said about him. So Eliphaz's diagnosis is generally true. He just got the wrong patient. Because while that may be generally true, it's not true of this one. So look at, he just follows it through. He makes his application. Look at verse 6 and 7. "Although affliction cometh not forth." Here he's just going to say, people make their own problems. Don't we believe that? Don't you think a lot of problems that people have, they've made themselves? I think he's right. Look at what he says here. Verse 6. "Although affliction cometh not forth of the dust." In other words, affliction just doesn't come out of nowhere, does it? That's what Eliphaz says. It doesn't just grow out of the ground like a weed. That's not how these things happen. And he's looking at this calamity, this concentrated calamity, and said, look, stuff like this doesn't just come up out of the ground. Verse 6. "Of the dust, neither doth trouble spring out of the ground. Yet man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward." I used to think that meant, well, people just generally, the world is full of troubles. I guess the world is full of troubles, but what he's saying here, the world is full of troubles that people make for themselves. These calamities don't just come out of the blue. Well, this one did come out of the blue. And Job didn't make these calamities. So look at his advice. What do you think about this advice? I've given people this advice, and I would continue to give people this advice. Look at verse 9. Job 5, 8. So here's a guy in calamity. Well, we know people in calamity. "I would seek unto God." That's good advice. Only it's the way he's telling them, "I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause." Well, this is really what Job does through the whole book. He's already doing that. He's already committed, and that's probably what, I bet that's what all of us are doing. I hope that's what we're all doing. Committing our cause, look at that, would you? And verse 8, "Commit my cause unto God. Seek unto God and commit unto God when I commit my cause." And then we'll take time to read it, but verse 9 on is a splendid and stupendous explanation of the character and deeds of God. We could just read one verse anyway. Look at verse 17. "Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty." And I would just point out to you that the rest of this chapter holds out bright hope for Job. So I want to point this out to you. This man begins as Job's friends as his friend, correctly recollecting his former deeds, his former life, his former character, speaks well of him. And then he just draws the conclusion, somewhat like those people on the island where Paul was washed up on the shore and just said, he's guilty. I know he's guilty of something. Nothing like this could happen without him being guilty. You know, things like that just don't happen. And I just tell you, that's wired into us, isn't it? I bet if you think back, you can look back and think how we often think this way. It just shows we have a moral conscience that often doesn't work right. But would you notice, does this sound like a legalist who doesn't believe in grace? Look at verse 19. Even for people who have taken false steps, which he thinks Job has, but we know that Job hasn't. How about this? Look at verse 19. Does this guy sound like he has a harsh view of God? Verse 19. He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles, yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee. In famine he shall redeem thee from death. In war and power of the sword, thou shalt be hid from the scourge of the tongue. Neither shalt thou be afraid of the destruction when it cometh, that destruction and famine. Thou shalt laugh, neither shalt thou be afraid of the beasts of the earth. For thou shalt be in league with the stones of the field, and the beasts of the field shall be at peace with thee. That's interesting, isn't it, how he talks about God being sovereign over the beasts of the field. And thou shalt know that thy tabernacle shall be in peace. Thou shalt visit thy habitation. Thou shalt not sin. Thou shalt know also thy seed shall be great. Thine offspring shall be as great as the earth. Thou shalt come to thy grave. Here's how you'll finish your life. In full age, like a shock of corn, cometh in his season. You know, he's prescribing. He said, Job, everything can be fixed. You can still finish well. So he believes in grace and mercy is still available. But he just says, Job, now you're going to have to come clean. Well, Job is coming clean as much as he knows how to come. Job doesn't know how to be any cleaner than he is. And notice, look at verse 27. Lo, this, we have searched it. And they probably had. They probably had. So is it, hear it, know it for thy good. So he's telling them. Now, how many think that this guy meant really to grind Job to powder and make his woes worse? How many think he wanted Job to get better and finish well with his advice? Say amen. Amen. Look at the last words. For thy good. He means it. He's dead serious that he says, look, this is what you need to do. Except for the fact that he is misdiagnosed. He says, Job, you know, something like this has to be, sin has to be the cause of it somewhere in your life. Well, again, I won't rehearse it to you, but you know God's testimony about Job. He said, it's not that I'm displeased with Job. Job's my best guy down there. That's my paraphrase. So you could be the best guy down here and really not look like it. You could be the best gal down here and really not look like it. Let's make our conclusions. We bring us to a conclusion. You know, what should we conclude from this? And here's just mine, and you can add any of yours and any questions you might have. Well, number one, you have an advocate. You always have. You're a Christian. You have an advocate. We have an advocate with the Father. You have the God-man, and he is entirely yours, just as if he is nobody else's. He's infinite, and the whole Lord Jesus Christ belongs to you, if you're a Christian, entirely. He's your advocate. He's answered in his body everything God could ask of a human being. He has answered it, supplied it, and he's done so on your behalf. And try to remember that however it's going. If it's going really good, if it's going really terrible, try to remember this. You have an advocate. Job is longing for one. He didn't understand it that well, but he said, oh, if I only had a kinsman. We'll come to that maybe later. Okay, how about this? Number two, use your advocate. You know, and don't live life without your advocate. You'll see you need him more and more as you go on. He's your firm foundation, and he's your superstructure. He's everything in between. Number two, be careful about assuming conclusions without adequate basis. Who remembers what chapter we looked in about the barbarians, the moral barbarians who jumped to the conclusion that Paul was a wicked man who vengeance suffered not to live? What chapter was that? Does anybody remember?
Acts 28.
I just wanted to help you remember that. You can remember that one. It just shows you how people think. That's in there to show you how people think. And it's so I think we have to be careful about assuming conclusions without an adequate basis. But as you're, number three, please realize some things we are simply not meant to know now, but we will know later. You know, it's very clear in this passage, isn't it, that we looked at tonight. Job does not know, does he? He thinks God's against him. Is God against him? God's thought of him all the way, start to finish, is that's my best guy down there. But he thinks it's different. And it's supposed, there are, for my life, for your life, there are times, stretches we go through, we are not meant to know. You're supposed to trust and obey best you know how. We will know later. Many things we'll know later. We may not know. I think that's safe to say we'll know later. Number four. And the last one. We are probably considerably less righteous, practically speaking, than we think we are. I'm going to just say that again. I'm talking about those of us who are here tonight. We are probably considerably less righteous, practically speaking, than we think we are. And I've been reading through 2 Samuel in the morning, and I'm reading how God is with David, and he's really a cut above practically all the people. And yet, when you come to chapter 5, it just says, and he took more wives and concubines, and seems not to blink an eye, like it's normal. And the other people seem to think it's normal. Some of them even probably thought it's, you know, a divine blessing. And don't you scratch your head and say, you know, what are you doing? And isn't that puzzling? More wives? I think he's got six by the time we get to. And here's one thing. It's, of course, you and I are way more affected by our culture than we think we are. You may think you're separated from the wickedness of it, and probably you are more, far, far more than most people are, but you may be way more affected by it than you think you are, and I may be too. And then 2 Samuel 6, the moving of the Ark of the Covenant on a new ox cart. You're reading that, it said, man, didn't, you know, shouldn't they have known that? I mean, well, God had written it down, and 3 months later they found it written down, and David said, you know, we didn't, that was our fault. We were ignorant. So, I just want to, for your trials, and we'll come to this verse more and more, but I want to conclude tonight in asking you to turn, well, actually, I got it written down for you. You don't have to turn to it. Job 34, 32. And I'm hoping we could all bow and say this verse. We could read it out loud together. This is a good prayer that Elihu waits and gives good advice to Job and those other three. Because, see, none of them really saw. Job didn't know. Eliphaz didn't know. Bildad didn't know. Zophar didn't know. They didn't know. And look at what this young man gave counsel. He said, listen to this. Last line on your handout. That which I see not. See, that was the problem. None of them could see. Folks, there's a lot going on right now in your lives you don't see. I'm going to just guarantee you that's true. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I've done iniquity, do you think David thought he was doing iniquity when he loaded up the Ark of the Covenant on the ox cart? I think he thought he was doing a great thing. Well, it wasn't a great thing. Well, you probably have things you do in your life. You probably think, well, this is normal. And probably is normal to you because you've been born and conceived in sin, raised in a sin-cursed world. And every person you've ever had a conversation with is a sinner. So lots of things seem normal that aren't normal. And we should say, Lord, if I've done iniquity. Job didn't know. He honestly, if he could search his heart, he could tell those guys, I'm not claiming to be sinless perfection, but I don't know what sins I've done. And we'll conclude there. Let's pray that prayer together. We'll just read it. I'll read it, and then you read it together with me at the end there. See it at the bottom of your handout, last sentence on your handout? See it there? This is a good prayer based on what we looked at tonight. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I've done iniquity, I'll do it no more. Okay, let's read it together. That's a good prayer. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I've done iniquity, I will do it no more. And with that, we conclude.